Here we are, sports fans. May 19th, Best Forking Sports Arena, coming to you out of the Grand Forks Best Source Studio. And tonight we got a couple of really special guests with us. The name of the show is called UND Preview, Preakness Stakes and Playoffs, NBA and NHL. Our guests tonight are head coach Bubba Swigert from the UND football team. I got you there. You're on camera, Bubba. You want to say hello?
Yeah, hello, everybody. Yeah. Great to be here.
And over here we got offensive coordinator Danny Freund, former UND quarterback, still holds some like completion records or something like that.
Yeah, a lot of short passes. A lot of quick ones, you know. Got my Derby Cup, though, here, so I'm looking forward to talking some horse racing.
We will. You know, talks Preakness. We will.
All right.
And over here we have expert analyst Dale Kulas.
Howdy.
I always say that he's not a real big sports fan. But
casual, more casual.
he really digs in the numbers and does a lot of research before we do our shows, and so he's got questions that I wouldn't think of having. And then, of course, we're missing the legend, Bill Deutsch. You know, I don't know, Bubba, you've known Bill probably.
I watched him play.
Well, I used to read about him in the papers when I was in school.
Yeah, I got a chance to watch him play when he was playing, running the ball for UND.
Yes.
Big man to tackle. Well, he didn't come down easy.
Before we get into it, I got to do the quick, are we doing the pilots tonight?
I believe so. Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and get that one there? I'll just give a little quick nod though. But yeah, we're being presented by Red River Pilots. Their season kicks off May 31st, and they're still looking for host families. You could go to their website at redriverpilots.com, and there you can find all the information for how to apply to be a host family, and you know, just to help out players get a room for the summer while they get their games and all that. Just help them out there, and yeah, redriverpilots.com is the place to go to find out more information on that.
And Red River Pilots is a collegiate wooden bat league. And they were looking for a PA announcer and concession workers, and they wanted people 21 years and older because apparently there's alcohol served at the ballpark. And we're talking Kraft Field, right?
Yeah, Kraft Field, yeah. I know they did have a job fair there last weekend, yeah, but I believe they still have some openings.
Okay, well, Southtown Poorhouse. Every day is a great day at Southtown Poorhouse. Stop in for your favorite drinks and, of course, happy hour, half-price apps and taps every day from 4 to 6 p.m. And you can't forget about Buck Burgers on Tuesdays and the awesome steak specials on Thursdays at 6. And make sure to check out the Southtown Poorhouse events page to find out when your favorite band is playing live. Every day is a great day at Southtown Poorhouse, 2015 Library Circle next to the Grand Cities Mall, open Tuesdays through Saturday from 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. Now hiring, great pay, flexible hours, part-time or full-time employee discounts, free cover on band nights, and this weekend is the final band night because they shut down the bands through the summer when the college kids leave town. So Friday night, the 20th, we have Tyler Hammond. And on Saturday night, the 21st, we have 2 weeks' notice, and then there won't be any bands until the kids come back in the fall. So we got our guests here tonight, Coach Swigert. I've been pestering him for a little while to get him on here, and I was, you know, I told him, drag along whoever you'd like. And we expect to try to bring you guys back sometime in the fall, just before the season again. But what has the team been doing to this point?
Well, right now we finished up our second semester. It was finals week and graduation last week, Saturday. And when guys were able to complete their finals, they go home for a little bit. We do have a little break here. We had a training cycle about 4 weeks after spring ball. And then we don't bring them back till May 31st. We have a meeting that night. And then June 1st, we'll start our summer training and we'll have all our returners back in town with a few of the newcomers, and then some of the other first-year guys will join us in July to complete that training and get everybody here in July.
So when you go into spring ball, do the guys that are graduating or on their way out, do they participate at all, or are they completely done?
They're done.
They're old dudes, huh?
We give them a locker if they want to work out yet. You know, we're really fortunate enough to have a draft pick this year. So
sure.
When Matt Wiletzka was in town, he was able to, you know, be around, use the weight room. Some of the other guys, Jackson Turner, Evan Holm, Jordan Kennedy, when those guys were in town. But most of those guys went away. And
well, is Kennedy's done also?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. The off-injured guy.
Yeah, it was a
tough player. But
pretty amazing story that he came back and, you know, usually an Achilles injury like he had would have 12 months at the minimum, and he came back. And Danny, what was it? It was
like 4 to 6 months. Like,
yeah, it was.
He hurt it in May, and he was playing in September. So, like, yeah, those Achilles are credit to him for the rehab and obviously the doctor that did the surgery. But that was impressive. The Rams had a running back do it. The running back that came back in the playoffs, he did it in like 6 or 7 months, and they were saying it was unbelievable. And Jordan came back sooner than him. So,
well, yeah, I think I was at the game when he got hurt. Was that a home game? No, maybe not.
Fargo.
Actually, we're down in Fargo.
Down in Fargo.
Yeah.
Well, I watched it on TV then.
Yeah.
So, I, boy, trying to come back from an Achilles injury coming back that fast. I mean, I've watched sports for a long time and seeing like NBA players go down and you don't see them for a year at least. And so, you know, I don't know, maybe the modern medicine, you had good doctors and a guy that determined maybe.
Yeah, it was really, really remarkable, you know, because we really planned on not having him in the fall. You know, when you hear it's an Achilles, but he kept coming in and say, I'll be back. And, you know, every time he got back to Grand Forks, he'd get a checkup, and he was really positive. And I think that really helped him, too. That positive mindset really helped him. And a lot of work, a lot of rehab.
Yeah, well, a good player that you don't want to have off the field, for sure. But you got a rough game. I mean, guys go down all the time. I mean, I've watched plenty of them, and it's like just about the time you think you got your full set out there, somebody ends up missing. Just nature of the game.
Yeah, it is. It's part of the game. It's part of the game we don't really like, but we know we got to deal with it.
Well, you can't factor it in. I mean, it's for a betting man, it's like, what are you going to do with that? You can't tell where the next injury is going to be or how quickly somebody's going to be able to come back. Now, I wanted to touch on both you guys. I pulled biographies a little bit.
And
so where do we want to start? Maybe we should start with the offensive coordinator over here.
Yeah, let's do it.
You came from the Milwaukee area, and
yep.
I saw that you were like all-state selection, and obviously I saw you play.
Yeah.
But I had no idea the background. You still hold like most of the school records?
At my high school,
yeah,
I would think I held some high school records. I had some state ones, but nobody threw the ball when I was coming out. That was like the early 2000s. So like,
so you were throwing. The ball.
We were like one of the first teams to like go four wide and spread people out and throw it around, and nobody really knew how to defend it. And so we had a lot of stats. It was fun, but I think teams have kind of caught up to that style now, and there's more people putting out stats.
Well, you, what I saw was that it looked like you held the completions, the yardage and the touchdown records at your high school. And you know, out here we're dealing with much smaller schools from where I'm guessing you came from.
I came from a bigger city, but I was actually at a private school, so we were a little bit smaller.
Well, a little bit smaller. So what, your graduating class?
Like 75.
Well,
so not too, I mean.
Well, not super large, but yeah. And then I looked at your career at UND, and of course you were playing during the transition period. No?
Yeah, the last year, so 2008, that was our first year of Division I. So that was my senior year. So my first 4 years we were Division II, and then that last year it was like, okay, we're going to make this move. So that was the kind of the transition period.
So you did your quarterbacking at UND. And I saw you who were NCC player of the month or player of the week at least three times, if not more.
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
well, you hardly remember now.
You're
getting old. But.
Yeah, a little bit more about the wins and the losses than the individual stuff. But
well,
we had good teams. It was fun.
No, and I was looking at some of your teammates and some of those guys that I know. And we're going to get into this a little more as we go along here. You'll be surprised.
Good.
But coach over here, you came from Zealand, and I was joking a little bit ago about I expect you to be this wearing a cowboy hat, bucking Broncos or something coming from out there.
Yeah. No. There's some cowboys down in my area.
Well, I know.
Yeah, a lot of ranchers.
Big, tough cowboys.
Yeah, a lot of farmers.
Well, that Zealand, Strasburg, and what's the third school down there? They're kind of a little
Wishick, Ashley, Linton.
Yeah,
it's all kind of behind the Iron Curtain. Yeah, a lot of Germans from Russia. Hey, I got to share with you, I hold a record at our high school, quarterback record. Most interceptions thrown in a season. That was hard to do. I have the record.
Yeah, because we're about the same age, and in those days there was a lot of passing going on.
I didn't like getting sacked. I threw it away, and I didn't throw it away well enough.
Oh, my gosh.
And you know, I played high school football, and we weren't a very good team. It was nine-man football in Madoc, and you know, I played safety and I played flanker, but I actually lined up wide as a wide receiver, and you know, I caught a few passes and whatnot. But I remember getting smoked by defenders to where it looks way easier than it really is.
Yeah, we played nine-man, but that's all we knew. You know, it was a good area for it.
Yeah.
You know, we had a lot of good teams, a lot of tradition at my high school, and it was really fun. Just a couple of weeks ago, Bill Bonesack, who started the program back in 1971, and he left Zeeland. You know, they had football in the 60s, and it was dropped, and he brought it back, which was great for our community, something to rally around, something new. And then he left for Mayville, and he continues to coach track at Mayport. He was out at one of the meets at Cushman, so it was great to see him, and just an awesome guy that wanted to do things for kids and got us involved with football at a young age and gave us a lot of opportunity that we wouldn't have had if it weren't for him starting that program.
I got a quick follow-up on that. Like you're saying, bringing football back and forth, like in the smaller towns, what was it like trying to get the football program started there? Was it just kind of trying to rascal up all the guys there and be like, come on, we got to get this going?
Yeah, you know, and we had basketball and baseball, and it was traditionally a big baseball town. We didn't have a pool, so kids played baseball all the time. Yeah. But to get it started, it was quite a challenge. You know, the guys that were playing, they were older than me, but they had no clue. So it was a one-man show. He coached the whole team himself and just got it started.
Oh, man.
And there was a lot of growing pains. We took a lot of beatings there in 71 and 72 really got a lot better, but had some good athletes. And 74, that fall of 73, the third year, really challenged for a conference title. And that was a good year. And then in 77 and 78, we're state champions in nine-man. So it grew quickly. And you know, but guys really loved playing. It was something new and exciting for the kids. And I think caught on. You know, we only had about 35 guys in high school, and I know in 77 we must have had almost 30 guys out for football. About everybody played.
Yeah, well, and that's how those Class B schools were. Everybody with able-bodied was out there. You had to be, and whether they wanted to be or not, you might drag them out there. But I, you know, as you brought that up, and you were talking about those years, and I said we were going to dedicate this show to the memory of your brother Lowell, who would have been 66 last week or
right
a few days ago.
Yeah.
And he was a trenched into this community, Grand Forks, for many years. And I know he was a quarterback at UND back in the mid-70s and played with Bill Deutsch and those guys. But he was always around. And much like Bill, he bled Kelly Green.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there. If there was a Domino's game going on campus, he'd probably be there. I mean, that's how into it he was, and he didn't miss a game. He was there everywhere, and I got to know him a little bit, and I know he was like a financial advisor in this town, and he had many, many friends. I don't know anybody I've ever come across that. We see we got his picture up on the screen there.
Yeah, that's a good one on that.
That's awesome.
Tailgater.
Yeah. Tailgater. But smiley guy that was well liked and you know, certainly unfortunate and too soon. But definitely, you know, since we got you on your coach, we wanted to make sure, shout out to Brother Lowell. I don't remember going to a game where he wasn't there.
No, not just football.
No.
Basketball, volleyball, whatever. Very passionate about UND and stayed very involved. And I just loved it. From his college days on, and
the reason that you sparked this was when you were talking about those early years at Zeeland,
right?
He must have been part of those teams then.
Yeah, you know, he was at a young age. He really matured early. Like he played on the varsity basketball team as an eighth grader. Now it was a small town, but he was actually a contributor. So he scored a lot of points throughout his basketball career. Baseball, I know we drove by Hatton the other day in the baseball field. So he's a freshman and played in that state tournament. On state runner-up in baseball. And then in 73 and 74, his junior and senior year, they won the state championship in baseball. So it was a good run of athletes.
Oh, wow.
You know, at his prayer service, you get to meet a lot of the old guys. And some of the guys maybe my age, you know, really talked about him. He was one of the first guys to go and play college athletics from our small town in a long time. So they... you know, talked about, hey, he really influenced kids like, hey, I can do this too, because he kind of set the tone that you can go do it out of small town Zealand. And we just had I know it was just a few weeks ago, somebody posted on Facebook and I showed Danny. It was Lowell as a sophomore in high school playing a little quarterback running around. So it was great to see it. But he was very competitive. I mean, I always share this story. He really got into golf in his I don't know, it must have been his 40s. He didn't play as a kid, but he was very competitive at it. And one of the last times I played with him, I didn't play much with him, but he was winning by a large margin. And we're on a par three, and he was a stickler for the rules. And I finish, and I go, I think I must have had a six there. Lowell, he goes, you grounded your club. That was an eight.
Yeah.
He was serious about golf. I golf with him at least once a summer in like UND outings.
Oh, yeah. So you got to know him too.
Yeah. Right? And he was always recruiting my wife. My wife from Grand Forks, she played college golf. So he would want her to go play in the scrambles.
Yeah. We'll get to her. I know your wife.
But he was serious about trying to get her to play because he wanted to win the damn scramble. Uh-huh. Like, it was like.
Yeah. She was a world class golfer.
Yeah. Yes, but Lowell was super competitive on the golf. He was really violent with his swing too. He would hack at that ball. He was a really good athlete.
Well, yeah. Multi-athlete then, yeah. in all sports, I look back at those early 70s and mid 70s. In fact, I tell people all the time, I think the high point of culture in our country was 1976, when the bicentennial was going on and everybody was united. Not like what we got going on today. I mean, it was a patriotic theme for like a 5-year period running into that, the 200-year anniversary of the country. And in 2026, we got the 250th year anniversary coming up, and I don't see anything like that going on. And I joke to people all the time that my goal in life was to make it to the tricentennial. We'd only have to be 114 years old.
Yeah,
it's a good goal.
Yeah.
But yeah. My kids would be in their 90s, you know, just to sum that up. But anyway, I look back at so fondly of that time in our country's history that there wasn't a war going on. Vietnam was over with, and people were pretty satisfied with what was happening. And right now with this the economy the way it is today, I hope this changes soon, but oh my gosh. It's something like unlike we haven't seen before.
Yeah, it's sure different. Us guys that are old enough to live through that time, and we had some hard times, you know, if I remember right. In school, I was in junior high. We were learning about we had some high interest rates at that time that we really had to get under control. And but people seemed to not be so. They were nice to each other. If they disagreed, they disagreed in a different way.
And I really do. I that's one of the things that, you know, and we're a sports show, but I do touch on this quite a bit about how we've lost that political discourse where you could sit and animatedly and angrily discuss politics and then throw it out the window and forget it. It didn't ruin friendships and family relationships and things like that. And nowadays it's like almost a war. I'd like to get back to that.
Yeah, that's why we can, in a lot of ways, we can do that in sports. We put all that stuff behind us, but now it's entered in there a little bit too. But we can, it seemed like back in those years, that's one thing. Although it was, you know, there were boycotts of the Olympics back in those years in 76 and 80 for us. I guess we're old timers if we remember that stuff. But
you're talking 76, and that's you take the 76 Olympics, and that's one of the most striking things is that at that point in time, Bruce Jenner was the greatest athlete in the world, right?
Yeah.
The decathlon and on the Wheaties boxes and to fast forward to where we're at right now is like, it's just unfathomable. Yeah. I mean, it really is.
I did have a kind of old school question. It was on my mind. I was just kind of trying to figure out when to ask it. Just kind of touching back was Memorial Stadium, just driving that Columbia overpass, just seeing it not there anymore. It's just, yeah, it's still just is, yeah, can't believe it's gone. I think the field, I think, is still there, right? Or they're still working on it. It's been a couple months since I've driven by it. But, I was kind of curious from your perspective, just, I know, because it was, 2001 when they switched over to the Alaris, right? Or 2001?
2001 was the first season.
Didn't they still use Memorial Stadium for, a practice facility for a little while, right, or so? Was it when you were still there, Danny?
We still use it for practice. Mm-hmm. So the field's there. The Memorial Stadium structure's now down.
Yeah.
If you drive, it's kind of a weird deal as you look at it. But they've got plans to build a new building there, five-story deal. But obviously the stadium's not there, and we have a lot of memories there.
Lowell
would have played his games there. Bubba coached a lot of games there as a coach at UND, and it's cool to have an on-campus stadium. I never got to experience that. When I got here, we were already playing in the Alaris Center. But our offices were in there. We worked out in there. We had a weight room. Our locker rooms were in there. So just when that thing came down, you just kind of, in about a week, it was gone, and it was 80, 90 years old. So it was, I don't know, it was a lot of memories.
I was going to say, just from watching or playing over there, just over there is a standout moment or there, during the tough winter games there, anything that come to mind right away?
Well, for my coaching, in my first life here at UND, 89 to 93, but there's so many memories, but some that stick out were the playoff game against Mankato State, when it was a quarterfinal game in Division II days, and they had a quarterback by the name of Jamie Pass. And I could not believe, because it was really cold, but it was probably 6,000 to 7,000 people, but they could not hear and get snap counts because they were in the gun. And that was early on when people weren't, they were one of the first to not huddle that we played against. And that crowd, whatever they were into, whatever they were doing before the game, they sure were revved up once the game started. And we won that one 52-28.
What always struck me about Memorial Stadium was on those ultra cold days, those folks were still out there tailgating like it was summertime or something. And whatever they were doing before they got in to get riled up. But I don't like the cold weather, not one bit. And when people talk about, I wish we still played outside. And I'm as a spectator, I don't want to sit out there in that icebox.
Yeah. Well, in 91, you talk about loyalty. That's when tailgating started to pick up in about 1990. And in 91, that's when Northern Colorado flew into town on Friday. And then the whole North Central Conference we had a late blizzard first week in November, late season blizzard. And they were here. And Dale Lennon, our D coordinator, was actually on the pregame radio show out at the, I think they did it at the Westward Hole early in the morning. And they announced on the radio, hey, the game's called off. The commissioner called out. And Dale goes, what? No game? We thought we were going to play in this blizzard. So I ran across the stadium over to it would have been the south east corner where some of my buddies had pitched a tent and had a heater going. And I went over there. I go, guys, no game. They go, we don't call off football games. And especially because they were in town. They flew in the day before. Yeah. But the reason the commissioner made the ruling, if we'd have played, these other teams got stranded on their bus driving on Friday night. And so we didn't play those games. And we really felt that possibly kept us out of the playoffs that year because we had a really good team and felt like we could have beat them. And then didn't get to play that game. And so that was one memory, too. But obviously the year we had that losing streak against North Dakota State and then beat them and the goalpost came down, that was a great memory. They waltzed it right out of the North End Gate and took it up and down University Avenue. So a lot of great memories. There's so much tradition at that stadium. You know, everybody has great memories.
Yeah. No, I sat in there and froze and watched some games, and I do remember them parading that goalpost around. But I enjoy the indoor.
Sure.
And you know, we talk about Bill. I call him the legend, like I said. And you know, when he was done at UND, he held every running back record there was until Shannon Brunell, Philip Moore, the kid at Chapel, and subsequent guys. But he still holds one record, the longest touchdown run from the line of scrimmage, 98 yards.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, I've been to a handful of UND games over the last several years. I usually go with Bill. And UND will line up on the one. And I'll lean over and nudge him and go, here it is, Bill. Here it is. That's about a 3-yard plunge.
It's usually going to be a quarterback sneak if you're on the one, or it's going to be a bomb. Or you're going to try to draw him off sides because you can't go any further back. So, like, 98 is pretty safe.
Well,
like 90, you know, only one more that can be longer than that, right?
Yeah, right.
It's not like a kickoff that can go 109, right?
But you know, he literally watched over the years as his records fell, you know. And, sure. And I know you started talking about him before we went on the air. What do you remember about him?
Well, he's just such a big guy, you know. For Bill, when he played, the linemen weren't like linemen now. You know, those guys are the linemen back in the early 70s. You know, 235 maybe. You know, some of the bigger guys were 250, but I think Brian Klipfel, who played in that era, was a captain from Ashley, North Dakota. He told me he played at 235 pounds. You know, they just, and Bill was 220 or 225. He just such a big guy in the backfield, and he didn't come down. And he just.
Where was Bill from?
Fargo Shanley.
He was far. That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah. Well, he's the youngest of six brothers. And Shanley at one point, they went, I don't know, like six seasons in a row undefeated. And, you know, Sid she was the head coach. Right. And, of course, his son Steve. I actually played basketball against Steve in the day. But Steve ended up, you know, going to Notre Dame and playing on the national championship team in 1979.
Wow.
And at that point in time, Ron Earhart was the head coach at NDSU. You know, later on, he was the Patriots head coach. And I always ask Bill about why he didn't go to NDSU, and his parents didn't like Earhart, so went to UND.
Yeah. So his brother Mike played here too.
Yes, and
had a good career.
It was like Kosowski? Was he playing?
Dale
would have been playing. Yeah. Here.
So those three guys for a period of time. I don't think Bill played with Mike at all.
No, I'm not sure, but. So the first game I ever watched, it was Brian Grover at quarterback and Dale Kosowski and Bill Deutsch. You know, they ran the option football at that time. Tom Petrick was a big North Dakota name from Bismarck High. He was a tight end. So, you know, they didn't throw the ball a whole lot. It was a lot of running. But I watched them play against Morningside, and UND won 49-7. And, of course, I'm in – 6th grade, 7th grade. I got the Memorial Stadium. To me, coming from a small town, North Dakota, that's first time to Grand Forks. I thought I was at the Coliseum out in L.A.
Me too.
Place was, and at that time, all the administrators wore those green jackets, those green blazers. So it was really pretty cool atmosphere coming from a small place.
It was way professional.
They all won the Masters. The green jacket.
That was awesome. You know what? Before we get off Memorial Stadium, I had a chance to spend some time with Gino Gasparini earlier this week. And not only was there game day tradition there, but he lived in that stadium. The hockey players and football players lived underneath, which later became our locker room and meeting rooms and weight room. So he had some great stories. But he lived in the North Tower.
Unbelievable.
Is where his room was. And just sitting listening to how he described that. And so there's more than just the game days out there. And then, you know, he talked about other dignitaries that would show up at the stadium or even at Hislop to speak. You know, JFK was here on campus and different things just a lot of tradition at that stadium. So it was sad to knock it down.
Huge legacy. Yeah. Big time.
Yeah. Are they going to keep the name Memorial Stadium with the new structure? I guess I didn't catch what they're going to brand it yet. Or
it'll be called Memorial Village.
Memorial Village. Yeah, okay. So well, that's still keeps at least partial over there. Yeah.
And I think, you know, you'll see it's going to be a structure that'll blend in with the university buildings. And we're really looking forward to that. It sounds like July 1st will be the start of the construction on that project. And with an 18-month to 24-month completion timeline, you know, around here, the weather.
Oh, yes.
Determines whether we... But boy, they sure build things fast. Our business school is awesome. That's built. The dorms that are being rebuilt, they can build really fast.
The only thing they're not building fast is that car wash on 17th and Columbia.
like 4 years? What's going on? I mean, I feel like...
Yeah. I don't know.
And it ran out of money or something.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Or the hospital.
Yeah, exactly. I got going on that again, though, I think.
Finally. But anyway, we wanted to ask you guys about what are your aspirations, or what do you see for the incoming bunch you got coming in? And I know, as far as I'm concerned, the team, I see it's on the incline. I see it's there. You guys you're right there. You're in a tough conference. And like Dale was we were talking about, you got Nebraska.
Yeah.
Opening up with Nebraska.
Yeah, the Cornhuskers.
Huge opener.
And I know they're not, you know, the Nebraska of the early 70s, but they're still Nebraska. And you know, Tom Osborne's not there anymore, but that's a big school, and it's on the road, I'm assuming.
Yeah, we're going to be excited to play. I can tell you that. Our guys are excited, and it's a great motivator to be able to play at Memorial Stadium down on their campus.
Oh.
85,000 people. They hold a record for the most sellouts and consecutive sellouts. And
Now, what city is that in, Lincoln?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I was in Lincoln this summer. And I walked around down there, and I thought, man, I wish I was a kid going to college down here. What a town.
It's a big college town. Most college towns aren't like that. It's like kind of like Madison. There's 200,000 people, I think. Yeah. And obviously Omaha's a lot bigger. That's about like a half an hour away. But
no, Lincoln looked like it would be a really great place to go to school.
Yeah.
Well, when the stadium's full, it's the third largest city in Nebraska, behind Omaha and Lincoln.
Yeah, there's no NFL team in Nebraska. It's the Cornhuskers, and they take a lot of pride in that. They're a heck of a program, really talented.
Well, and you know, like I say, in the early 70s, Mike Rozier, wasn't he like a Heisman Trophy winner?
They had so many good backs. I am Hip and Rozier.
I forgot about him. I am Hip.
Gosh,
what a name!
A lot of guys.
Yeah. No, I mean, I followed them when I was a kid, and to see, like, you know, they keep trying to rebuild and get there again, and I don't know, I just, the landscape, and that's one of the things we wanted to talk to you guys about, too, is, oh my gosh, you brought up Texas A&M's coach, what's his name?
Jimbo.
Oh, Jimbo.
Jimbo. And so he and Saban are having a little spat or something in the media, and NIL. So we've done several shows. We've talked about naming, imaging, and licensing, and that kind of thing. And what I looked at was, okay, and some of these whether it's basketball or football or hockey or soccer or whatever it is, you would find an athlete who suddenly got a $100,000 endorsement, and then what does that do to the rest of the team? I mean, you know, the jealousies and the interest, you know, I just don't understand how it'd be difficult to play along somebody making money like that. Bronny James right now, he's got like $3.5 million in endorsements and he hasn't stepped foot on a campus. And so I can see where a guy like Saban is saying, well, they're paying these guys. But then, you know, it's Alabama, so really? Nobody got a car over there? Nobody got a flight home or anything? I don't know.
Those guys are in a different...
Oh, yeah, I know.
Different arena.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, at that level. But, you know, it really is it's here to stay. And there's got to be some ways to work the system a little bit better. Well, so I think, you know, but... it's not going to change. I think it's here to stay, but you deal with, yeah, I would imagine it's a challenge in the locker room if, you know, and we hear just second-handed what's going on or through media sources, but, you know, if guys can make some extra, you know, I'm at our level. Some guys are making some, but it isn't a huge amount. But sure. If it helps them out a little bit more, good for them. And but at that level, it's, you know, what is really going on and what's being said. I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, we're hearing it secondhand.
So everything that used to go under the table is now basically, well, my car dealership can sponsor you, or my clothing store can sponsor you.
That's what they said. It's like a joke. NIL stands for now it's legal. It's like everything that's been going on in the SEC, now it's just, you can pay them. But I think there's going to be a lot of different directions it goes. And I don't think people can kind of forecast, it's gone, I think it was intentional, for athletes to be able to go out into the car dealership and just put their name on something and make a little money. Now it's just basically boosters paying guys as much as they can. It's like a bidding war for, and some schools want to get into that, and other schools are like, no, that's not.
Well, and when we were covering this stuff, we talked about, because we had different examples all over the place. If you remember, Dale, there was a school in Idaho where the person that was sponsoring that NIL gave every person on the football team $1,000. So it was everybody on the team.
Yeah, we're kind of starting to get into where really people are trying to already potentially exploit loopholes and stuff like that, and just getting tweaked a lot over the coming years here.
But then there was one in Florida also where it was even-handed, so everybody got their tuition paid. You know, so I don't know, you know, that makes more sense to me.
Well, yeah, the way we understand, Brigham Young did it, BYU, they didn't have any more walk-ons because their walk-ons got a certain amount of money. So, but was it called scholarship? No, because you still have scholarship limits.
Yeah.
And they'll have them at that level. But it's, I don't think they envisioned how much it would be used in recruiting. It was looked at, hey, once they're there, and they're playing for the university, and they're becoming a really top player, they should be able to make money off their jersey sales or whatever, you know, their name.
Well,
but that was the intent. But what's going on right now is not what the intent of the rule is.
It's exploded. It's exploded. Well, it's
entered into recruiting in a big way.
Yes, and the thing about that is I understood that, you know, there's been thousands and thousands and thousands of college athletes that was their plateau, right? They weren't going to the NBA, they weren't going to the NHL, they weren't going to the NFL, but when they were on campus, everybody knew who they were, nationally even. And so to be able to prosper from that, sure, but it should be really even an even-handed thing. The other big issue beyond the NIL.
Before we dive into that second issue, probably should our first ad break here.
Well, that's what his, he keeps me on in
line. Yeah, we can get a little off track sometimes.
Without him, we never have any advertising. Just be me. CNH Insurance of East Grand Forks. CNH Insurance began with the goal of building an agency with the highest of principles, personalized attention, and service. This concept remains to be the priority today. They strive to give everyone who walks through their doors special attention and the best customer service possible. Their agents have over 50 years of combined insurance experience. They are licensed in Minnesota, North Dakota, and Arizona. So for all your insurance needs, contact Justin, Jody, or Tammy at 218-773-0287 or stop by 1427 Central Avenue Northwest, East Grand Forks. That's CNH Insurance of East Grand Forks. Grand Forks' best source insures through CNH, and so should you. All right. So anyway, the other thing I was getting into was, so NIL is a big deal right now, but so is that transfer portal. Holy smokes. And that has kind of a different abrasiveness to it's not necessarily the guys transferring around. It's those high school kids coming out as seniors and being replaced by somebody coming from another school at a fifth year or sixth year or whatever it is. I don't know. What do you see there? Danny?
Yeah, I mean, it's just another thing that's probably here to stay, where guys are easily able to, you know, transfer without having to pay a penalty or graduate, where it's, you know, that combined with the COVID year that guys are getting, it hurts some of the high school recruiting over a period of time. Eventually it'll kind of get back to maybe normal, but not with the portal. Is just guys were always able to transfer, but now it's just easier for them to do so. There's no penalty, and I think you know, we're going to be into that, but you try to develop guys and get them through high school and keep them here. And hopefully they're loyal and they respond to that, but you know there's going to be turnover.
Well, and that's another part of it. It isn't just the kids coming out of high school that aren't getting those spots that they normally would have got. But then, NDSU, their basketball team, they made it into the 64, the round of 64, and then they had like – three guys hit the transfer portal. And I'm like, well, had you not been recruited here to play, you wouldn't have had that exposure. You know, you'd have probably been at some JUCO or you know, somewhere else. And then even Grant Nelson was flirting with the idea. And I was like, well, he's a local, you know, Devil's Lake kid. He's staying, but at least for now. So there's that. And then, let's see, who was the other team I was looking at? It escapes me right now. But our UND basketball team. We had a freshman that was brought in here and had a pretty decent season on a less than stellar season.
2 years in a row, freshman of the year in the conference.
And then he's going to hit the portal. And I'm like, well, you wouldn't have been at that value, I guess, is my point, if you had not come here for us. What do you do as a coach? Yeah.
Well, you know, it's frustrating. And, you know, you feel for, you know, when you're losing guys that you give an opportunity to and probably found maybe a guy a little bit under the radar. And that's hard to do nowadays because there's much exposure for, you know, years ago, there were like secrets in recruiting. There aren't any secrets anymore. The guys are posting their highlights and social media and the communication. So everybody knows about everybody, but you got to take a chance on somebody. And the hard part is when we get to our level or they're transferring out to go to maybe higher levels or the Power Five conferences, you're developing guys for a year or two and giving them an opportunity, they're able to leave without a penalty. And, you know, that's what junior colleges used to be for.
Yeah.
You know, you'd go to a junior college to develop. And if you wanted that opportunity, you know, because not everybody was going to junior colleges because of academics, because they were not a NCAA qualifier. Other guys were going there for another opportunity.
Sure.
And so that can be frustrating. I think, you know, the first time I ever heard a little of this was, you know, the Weber State coach who I became friends with when we were in the Big Sky. You know, he'd talk about, because they had some guys that would go on their mission. So they'd come to Weber State, play a year or two, go on their mission for 2 years. And he goes, if they were really good, we knew we weren't getting them back. They were going to be at Utah or BYU.
Yeah.
So he experienced that a little bit before, and he was really concerned when this rule was being discussed. He said, we experience that now, but we'll experience it at a different level because it's going to happen a lot. So the one thing that the NCAA is really trying to do now is doing a lot of research to see exactly how many guys are going into the portal and really getting a true opportunity that, you know, because we're going to hear about the big names that go from Oklahoma to USC or, you know, within the, you know, the Power Five conferences or like the quarterback at Ohio State left Georgia and he became the starter. We're going to hear about all those, but last year, you know, after the first semester, there were over 800 guys in the transfer portal and only 28% had offers going into second semester. So it's an alarming statistic. So you know, I think there's going to be some education and to level out a little bit, but it's here to stay. Like Danny said, it's here to stay. We're going to be dealing with this, and you know, you always want to hope you get a guy that stays really loyal to your program. But boy, there's a lot of outside pressures. You know, once you get to a level, hey, you can play at another level, or you can go and play it. And you know, you really hope it works for everybody, but it's not going to work for everybody. We've seen it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've seen it a lot.
And you know, I look at that and I guess in the past it was always seemed just like the hockey, you know, and that wasn't the portal. It was just you had these recruits coming in and, you know, the NHL or the AHL or whatever the offers were. So we have a guy for 1 year, 2 years maybe, but we expected that they were going to bounce. But now when you're seeing your basketball team and your football team and who knows what other sports just hitting the transfer portal because it's like the vogue thing to do, I don't know. I between that and the NIL, I'm like, ooh, the NCAA has a hornet's nest to deal with.
That they're combining too, because people are going to the portal, the really good ones, and it's like a bidding war with NIL money for some of the bigger schools, for some of these guys that come from our schools where they're, you know, getting offers where it's like, I don't know if I can turn this money down. You know, it's kind of, it's a goofy deal, but I don't know. There's a lot of consequences in it. It'll kind of have to go some years here to figure out, like, all right, looking back, kind of like Coach said, like how it all fell together. But I look back at my experience, like there's something to be said for sticking through some things. Like, and I played quarterback. I didn't play for 3 years. Like I thought about transferring, but at the end of the day, you realize, hey, I got to fight through some things, and you learn a lot about yourself, and you're with a team for 4 or 5 years. You develop those relationships. If guys are bouncing around, like, I just feel like that college experience might not be the same, and then you might not learn some lessons that you learn in college that you take with you the rest of your life. So I think even just some of those things, the parent looking at some of this, it's, you don't really realize it at the time, but it might, you know, might affect some guys down the road.
Well, and you know, those are life experiences, and some of those are beneficial to you, you know, whether you went on somewhere else or not. Some of the people you were in contact with, and I went back and looked at some of the guys you played ball with. Brock Belmore was one of the guys. Who was the lineman? Brenneman.
He's an Omaha guy. Yeah.
And then you know, I'm a City League basketball guy for years and years. And see, this is the only time you cross paths with me.
Okay, yeah, we go down in the paint or something.
Because I was already a little long in the tooth by the time you showed up.
I don't think I stopped playing when I got to about 30. I played for a few years.
You played for Bank Forward, and you played with Brady Trenbeth.
Yeah, Brady. Sills Brady gets a lot of shots up, man.
Brady doesn't pass the ball. No.
Okay. I mean, Cavalier Tornadoes. I mean, yeah, he was state beat.
So Brady was the one guy jacking up shots, whether he was hitting or not. He was never going to stop shooting. But here's so my team and your team played in a championship. 2014, 15, somewhere back there.
That would have been right around.
But yeah. I was old then already, yeah. So I was directing more than I was playing. Yeah. But you had a rebound. And I knew you were the quarterback. And, uh-huh. Oh, yeah, look, they got another athlete from the football team. And typically football players do pretty darn well in City League basketball. I had some of them playing with me.
Okay.
But you got a rebound, and then you went under the basket and did like a reverse layup, and it went all the way over the top. So over the rim.
Yeah.
You missed it.
Yeah, I was going to say it.
And I'm on the sidelines, and I go, nice reverse. And I get the death stare. Like, who the hell are you?
that's probably par for the course. Like, I had a little bit of a temper. I still kind of flare up every once in a while. I got a couple of tees in high school where it's they rallied the team sometimes. Other times I look like an idiot, but.
But anyway, you know. No, we crossed paths a little couple times there. And then also, I said, my daughter played high school basketball with your wife.
Okay.
She's a little bit younger, but she was on the same time. So I was going to ask you, so what's it like to be the second best athlete in the household?
It's not very fun. I mean, we go play golf, and I don't really like that. Yeah, it's hopefully our kids get some athleticism. That'd be a good thing.
Because she was a good basketball player, and of course she was a stellar golf player. And then of course your brother-in-law Pat.
Oh, you know Parnes, huh?
Well, he's my daughter's classmate.
There you go.
So Pat was the goalie on the 2008 Red River High School team.
Yep.
Boy, Ryan Leducer was Mr. Hockey. Eric Mellon went and played 4 years at Princeton off that hockey team. And they were the best team in high school hockey that year, Red River.
Yep.
And that's the three overtime loss to Grafton in the state tournament championship game with six guys on the ice.
Yeah.
Okay. You ever heard that story?
I just remember the six overtime game when they called it a tie.
Well, that one.
That was 77.
Fargo, one of the Fargo teams there.
No, that was Red River Central.
Red River Central. Yeah. Well, this in 08, this was a three overtime game with Grafton.
Where was it at? Was it at the
at
Ralph?
At the Ralph.
Yeah, I've heard about this one, yeah.
And so in the third overtime, they call a penalty on Red River. So now it's 5-on-4, but Grafton's got a sixth guy on the ice, and he scores the game winner. They caught it on video footage. Referees didn't catch it, so it doesn't matter after the fact. But my bigger bitch was that being a Red River parent and knowing all those kids all my life. I they all used to come by the house and stuff. And I, you know, Pat, he's the goalie. And,
yeah.
And Red River goes almost six periods of hockey without a power play. That's like impossible. It's like not calling holding in football. You know, it'd be like two whole games without a team getting called for holding.
Yeah.
Six periods of hockey without a penalty. And Eric Mallon, the guy that went to Princeton, was getting dragged down all game long, couldn't get a call. And I still talk to these kids because that's one of those things, you know, I'm a sports guy and learning about sports and things that make you stronger and teach you lessons. But when you lose a game like that, what is that, you know? So when I talk to these guys, they're like, Monty, I think you're still mad about this. I forgot about it, you know. You remember it better than I do. And I'm like, well, I watched it, and I thought I felt so bad for those kids that's how it went down because they had really a super team. And
you're not over it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's time. You got to let go, Monty.
No, it's time. It's time.
Hug it out.
Pat shouldn't let the goal in. I'm going to text him after this. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah, I'm still upset.
It doesn't matter if there's six out there. Just don't let it in the net, man.
So, but then in 2009, the Red River team that probably shouldn't win ends up winning. You know, so that's kind of how sports works out, right? So the team that should have won did, but to Grafton, oh my God, that was a bad one. The whole city of Grafton was in the Ralph. There was nobody in Grafton; they were all there.
Yeah, I think it's easier for the players to get over things like that than it is fans.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just like because you're in the arena, like you're playing, and
there's six guys on the ice.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kinda,
I was actually going to add that. That's like a good follow-up. I was going to mention, like, how just from playing, coaching, and all that, like, what's the difference between, like, getting over or just immediately go to the next game or just, like, kind of review tape and all that? Or does it kind of learn how to deal with it or cope or just, you know, process it?
Yeah, good question. I think it's especially if it doesn't end your season. Like, that one ends the season, so you have a little more time to really, you know, think about it because it's over. If like, we had an opponent, like, last year we lost a few games where it's like we can't – they were tough losses too. Like ones that come down to the wire against rivals. Like you're just like woulda, shoulda, coulda. Man, we could have won. But then you got to move on to the next one. You can't let the previous week get you beat the next week. But, yeah, it's at least you have some control over it because you know you can start your process and you just know that you put everything into it and we're going to prepare. But as a fan, it just kind of – And we're all fans too. Like we watch the NFL. It's like, oh, you should like you kind of become like that way. But that's what makes sports so fun because everybody's feels like they're a part of it and kind of invested. But yeah, it's different for everybody. But I feel like if you're playing, it's a little bit easier to kind of move on.
So now another thing that kind of crosses my mind is like now you were an assistant coach at UND to start with, and Dale Lennon was at the same time.
Yes. I started in 89, and Dale Lennon was the D-line coach, and then 1 year later, he became the D-coordinator.
Okay, so you guys, Roger Thomas then was
the head coach, yes.
And then when you left, did you go directly to Duluth?
Yep.
And then you went to Southern Illinois where Dale was?
Yes.
So Duluth ended up winning a championship, though, but had you left there then?
The year I got out of the way.
You got
the year after
the way.
I left, they won it all.
But so who was the head coach then?
Bob Nielsen, who was the AD that hired me. And when I left, he went back to, he was AD and the head football coach.
So you developed this team for him and handed it to him on a platter.
That's Monty, you're exactly right. That's exactly what happened.
Some people's theory.
Bubba recruited all these guys. Yeah. This freshman class. That was my senior year. So they're all my age. Like some of the guys from Wisconsin I got recruited with ended up going to Duluth. Guys that I played in all-star games with. And then that senior year, like coach left to go to Southern Illinois and they had a great team. Like we had just gone Division One, so we weren't able to. We would have beat him if we would have played him.
But those were your recruits.
They went and beat Grand Valley State. I mean, it was unbelievable. Yeah. They had a really good culture that they had built up for 4 years. Where it's like, you know, and Bubba was probably the most important part of that with his coaches and how they recruited and what they built in the locker room.
Well, and I think that's funny that because to me. That's when the Duluth football program started to rise a little bit. And then, of course, our Sandlin guy out there is when their hockey team started to rise. You know, there's something about this Kelly Green and what they transform.
Yeah, you know what really helped us at Duluth was the first year I got there, we were in the North Central Conference. And, you know, when you had to play North Dakota and South Dakota and Omaha, you know, you really had to – it was tough. And we had to up our game. You know, our first year was, you know, it was a big learning curve for the guys. And nothing, you know, the Northern Sun, Great League, a lot of tradition. It just was different, you know, with
The
programs like the resources at UND and South Dakota and Omaha.
Every week. It's, you know, and it's not too dissimilar from like going into our football conference now in the Valley. Like, and we had success early, but it's.
Oh yeah,
it's hard. Every week, even the lower level that don't have the record. Like there's talent. You look at the NFL draft. Like how many guys got drafted out of our conference compared to even some FBS conferences? It's really good football.
Your conference and the Big Sky Conference. I mean, that's the dominant teams in that double A, D1 double A.
Yeah, FCS.
And well, certainly that's who played for the title was Montana State and NDSU, the Ag School, as we call them, or Bill likes to call them, Ag School down the road. The AG, we can blast them if we want. That's what we do. We're waiting to turn the corner on those guys one of these days. It doesn't go forever. I don't care what anybody says because you know the Celtics were a dynasty in the '60s, and you know they have their thing, and they got a 5-year jump on us, right? Something like that, if not. Really longer when you think about it, but I think things are trending in the right direction. And
well, you know, one thing that we think really will help us, and you know, you throw in the COVID year was a different recruiting year, but when we were announced as we're going in the Missouri Valley Football Conference, I really think that changed our ability to recruit the Midwest. And we just think, you know, for us to be successful at North Dakota, within 5 hours, we got to do a great job of recruiting in the Twin Cities. And, you know, you go to Sioux Falls and South Dakota, North Dakota, always important, Winnipeg. And then you reach out to traditional areas like Wisconsin. And now that Iowa becomes because we get exposure there now with Northern Iowa in the league. And we're going to go to, you know, Missouri where Kansas City becomes a factor in recruiting. And we always wanted to recruit those areas, but when you're playing in the Big Sky, and the Big Sky is a
way west,
is a great conference, but we were recruiting kids and playing out in a different area. And it just helps us. It makes it more fair, and we feel like it's still hard work, where you are.
But the fact that you're back where South Dakota State and South Dakota and SU are, those natural rivalries – I mean, that's where
college
it's
sports, man. And that's who played against UND for 80 something years. Like that's who the fans know. Like it's just, it's better for everybody. But I think like a big part of our success is like filling up the Allaire Center. Like the home field advantage at our level is so key. Like, cause you look at what NDSU's done, like a lot of their playoff games are in that place. And it's when you can get home field in the playoffs, like when we take care of business at the Allaire Center and people fill it up like they've been filling it up and make noise. It's a hard place for opponents to come in here and win. And then we go on the road, we win a couple, and then you're set up. But I think people in town have to understand that, how important that home field, and it doesn't just happen. It's because they go and support it the way they do, and they tailgate, and you know, it started at Memorial Stadium, like, and Lowell was a big part of that. We were talking about, like, that's the community atmosphere, like bleeding green, like that's what makes this place special. And having that in the community is, it's only going to help us get to that goal, win a national title, and you know, taking over.
Yeah, I love the matchups you guys got this year. You mentioned just having all the more regional rivalries and stuff like that. Just bring back. I was just taking a look at their schedule, and I see South Dakota State, University of South Dakota, and what a way to wind it down. Of course, the ultimate way to end the season with NDSU there. Any particular matchups you like? How the schedule is lined out for you guys this season?
Well, you really got to take it one game at a time. You know, it's important. How we prepare for Nebraska to go down there, and it's going to be a great challenge for our team to go down there in front of 85,000 and crowd noise and dealing with that. And then we come home, and our conference opener is a little bit different this year. We had to make some schedule changes. So Northern Iowa conference game is the second game of the year. And then we have two more non-conference and I mean, one more non-conference, and then we're back into the league. And but a lot of good opponents at home, but I couldn't agree more with Danny. And that's why when people come out and support us at the Alaris, it really makes a difference. It's just a hard place to play. We know it.
Well, it gets loud. It does. Yeah, it's like being in a Quonset.
You know, if you remember back to the semifinal game in 2001, Cal Davis, they had 7 5-yard penalties. Those are huge. There's a big difference between 2nd and 3 and 2nd and 8 or 3rd and 5 and 3rd and 10. Just a huge advantage because it's a hard place to play. And defensively, we deal with it, you know, because we can't hear either on defense when that's going on. But we got to be able to handle it. And then our fans are educated. So offensively, when we're out there, we can hear. Oh, yeah. It really helps us.
No, because I go to the games with Bill all the time. And that's and I sit with him, and he analyzes it for me, and I just take it all in. And your special teams units blocking kicks, my, they were pretty special. Yeah, special teams. Wow, you know, and we don't want to beat you guys down with too much about what you guys got going on. We want to talk some casual sports now, because
we got it. We're ready.
Okay, so NBA, and I heard you were a Buck fan. Of course you are. You're from out there, but
yeah, they're done.
Rough game 7 last weekend. Really,
when Middleton went down, that was kind of the finish of it, really, because they needed that third head there.
They need some shooters in the outside.
But he definitely was a big loss to them. And then so now they're playing tonight.
Is that they started 7:30. They're a little ways in. I'll get you a little update here.
We're talking the Heat and Celtics.
Heat and Celtics. Yeah, I'll get you a score here.
Possibly Al Horford wasn't going to play because he was in COVID protocols, but he was cleared this afternoon.
What happened to Smart the other night? I saw he wasn't playing.
Well, he
took a night off or what?
Well, he's been dealing with some type of injury. They've been kind of almost hockey like about it.
He played well against the Bucks. I mean, he didn't miss any action against them.
But he's playing tonight.
Okay.
The one kid, his last name is White, comes off the bench for them. He's out.
Okay.
But Horford and Smart were both supposed to play. Of course, Jimmy Butler lit them all up in game one with the 41. And you know, if you ever listen to Common Man down in the cities, it's like, like, why couldn't we have a player like that on the Timberwolves? Oh, wait.
Oh, man.
We did. And, you know, they could have used him this season.
Yeah. That one's going to go 7, I bet.
Well, yeah.
I think that one's going to go 7.
Well, I'm a New York Knicks fan. I'm a New York Yankee fan. I'm a New York Ranger fan. So I've suffered for a long time with the Knicks. But I'm not a Jimmy Butler believer. I think the guy can have really great games, but I don't think he can have a great series is how I feel about him. That's just me.
Yeah, kind of like your guy from the Knicks years ago. Who was that?
Which one?
Oh,
Starks.
Oh,
remember how good he could be?
Remember when he went baseline?
That's like pouring wound in a salt I know. In a wound.
I was in Chicago when they beat the Bulls, and everybody's thinking, "Oh, the Bulls are in trouble because Starks." And then it just didn't happen. But he played at Rapid City, I think. That's where he played CBA.
Yeah, he did.
Right? John Starks?
John Starks was one of those guys, though, that was hard not to like because he went through the long route to get there. You know, they worked his butt off to get there, but when Michael Jordan took those 2 years off to go play baseball, The Knicks made it to the finals against the Houston Rockets. It went seven games.
Two in a row?
In game seven, John Starks was either 3-for-18 or 2-for-18. I forget which it was. And Pat Riley was the head coach, and he went with what got him there. And all Starks had to do was make one more shot.
That's why he kept him in there.
That's better than the Suns did in game seven.
Oh, boy.
That was bad.
Boy, you want to talk about a colossal meltdown.
At home.
Yeah, at home. And you get blasted like that. Yeah, yeah. So you're keeping up with it.
Yeah.
That was – Chris Paul will never recover from that.
No, you're right.
And I feel bad for him because he's put his dues in there and he's been around and had his moments, but he's just not destined to get that ring.
He played really well against the Bucks last year in the finals too.
Yeah.
They just
– Well, they had a 2-0 lead in that one.
I know.
And he's like – I saw a stat, something about he's lost something.
Five series when he's up 2-0 or something.
Well, yeah, and something like seven game sevens or something like that. It's like,
yeah, it seemed like the general consensus going around was that people were surprised that Bucks got eliminated from that matchup there.
With the Celtics?
Yeah.
Well, they were shorthanded. They really were.
They were the three seed, I think, too, but
they just didn't
have the same, I don't know.
Well,
didn't have the same feel to last year.
Chris Middleton missing,
a big part of it.
Huge part of it. Yeah. Huge part. You take a guy that's throwing in 20 points a game.
I mean, Grayson Allen's not going to get it done.
Oh, Grayson Allen.
That's like me in City League right there. Grayson.
There it is. Nice reverse.
Reverse layup.
Nice reverse.
Not even hitting the rim. And
get heckled and you don't like it?
Yeah.
If you don't hit the rim, you can get heckled.
But to be truthful, it was late in the game and – My team's always had I was a strong believer in numbers. 10, 12 guys. And so when we'd get late in the game, I could throw fresh bodies at people. Good fresh bodies too, not some hacks. I mean, guys that could probably be starting for most of the teams and they were okay. We were okay with that. We were mature enough to where we didn't have to be out there pounding the ball all game long.
You're like Phil Jackson of City League, right? How many rings you got? How many titles?
12.
Oh, so you got more than Phil.
Phil. Yeah. We
pretty impressive.
Yeah.
We had a 20-year run where we
20-year run.
Same guys.
Yeah. I tell you, and they kept the same coach. That's hard to hang in there.
Yeah, I was the GM.
Player coach. He was everything. Yeah. He transitioned. Yes. Transitioned right.
But the key to that, though, was that when I knew I couldn't be that guy anymore, I stepped back.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys don't do that. They still want to be the man. Yeah. And I was like, no, I can do other things and help. But for many years, we battled a team called Zavril Construction, and Dave Vonish played for them.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And if you talk to Dave, over a course of about 8 years, we were about 50-50.
Yeah.
Where we played those guys down, and he is as great, good as they come. And Steve Brecky's another one. We played a lot of ball with
Dick
him.
Dick Olson used to recruit a good team.
Well, Dick Olson is where I got my mentality from, because his teams used to come rolling in like that with 10, 12 guys.
Yeah.
And there was no let up. It was everybody that came in was just as good as the last guy.
Yeah.
And late in the game you had big old Claybo in there or Dave Godfrey Vance Bowersox, Rich Bernhardt, they were. Those guys were all
some Grand Forks names here.
Rich Bernhardt. I played some noon ball against him when he wasn't. He was Rich, different at that time when I played against him. But
and I had Rich at the end of Rich's basketball days. He got on a couple more championships with us after he played all those years with those guys. And so Rich, boy, he could shoot the ball. 6'7" guy.
Yeah,
they could shoot the ball. But no, that was the thing about, like I said, it was attrition. So and literally, I had my son when he was like 8 years old. He was videotaping games, okay, for us in the City League. And then he was 30 years old, still videotaping games for us in City League. He got much better at it.
You guys have like film sessions or what? What are we talking here?
Study that tape.
Oh yeah, tape doesn't lie.
Okay.
because
You got these guys that play, I don't care what level of sports they play, and you can show them on tape just how slow they are. You know, because everybody thinks they're going 100 miles an hour out there, and they're just plodding along. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a, yeah, the tape makes a world of difference. I mean, it's eye-opening for some guys. Yeah,
are we running like a certain offense? Are we high ball screens or swing?
I had points where I tried to get them to run like a continuous offense. Yeah. Only the Mayville guys came along later and did that.
Okay.
Yeah. They actually ran an same offense over and over. But but my guys were more of a – we were a three-guard offense, three shooting guards. We went to that three guys that could knock threes down all day long.
I'd defend the whole court, man.
And then just two other guys have to go get the ball.
Yeah.
And so you live with that. Oftentimes undersized, but boy, when you can shoot like that. Go ahead.
No, that's good, man. I'm learning a lot tonight.
Well, my thing though is now I can't hardly walk. I got an artificial knee.
I was going to ask you where's the? Do you ever have any major injuries, or was it just overtime?
I probably went 3 years too long.
I didn't realize it would be the Mount Rushmore. You know, it would be Phil Jackson, Pat Riley, then you. I mean, 20 years.
Pretty much. Well, no, I'm more in the Phil Jackson, Jimmy Rogers, Bill Fitch.
All right. Yeah, we got to keep it more local.
I tell that to people all the time. You know, at one point in the '90s, Bill Fitch, Jimmy Rogers, and Phil Jackson were all head coaches.
Yeah.
Three, and there's no university in the country can make that claim.
So cool.
Yeah, you know, and the photo's over.
And it's really, if you that doesn't get talked about probably enough, is the North Dakota basketball just tradition. Like, you look at some of the guys, even like Jacobson and McDermott, mm-hmm. and some of the names that have come through here and the success. It's kind of
Dale Brown.
Yeah.
Dale Brown and then the guy that was in Arizona.
Lute Olson.
Yeah.
North Dakota guy, too. All really great coaches. Lute Olson, Dale Brown, and Phil, you know, and that other trio. You're like, wow, that's great coaching, you know.
I know it was long overdue. I finally made it to my first UND basketball game, but for the season closer against NDSU there a month or two back, and that was just – I got a lucky, really good seat, but just seeing it that up close and personal just is a whole new dynamic. I love it. Yeah,
there's some athletes out there.
Yeah, and I love the Betty, by the way. They're at that – what a great arena. Yeah, so just such an intimate feeling there. So, like – Do you catch out many? Try and make out to many hoops games at all? Or
yeah, we try to really support the. They're fun to go to, both women's and men's. Like, they do a great job, and it's a nice arena to watch a game in. We've had some success. Like, it's been fun to kind of follow, and then kind of with the COVID year, like, we haven't traveled down when they played in the Summit League Championship down in Sioux Falls. That's a great tournament to go to. One of the best conference tournaments in all of college sports.
Talking to gals.
The men and the women are down there in Sioux Falls at the
tournament
for the Summit League. But yeah, it's a fun. I mean, it's, you look at even South Dakota State this year and some of the players coming out of that league. It's, you go watch some really, really high end talent.
Okay, guys, I know we're getting there. Baseball, Twins are sitting in first place, and they're in a weak division. Doing really well. They got my Yankee guys playing for them.
Yep.
My Yankees have been on a tear. They lost today, but boy, oh baby, they were playing 750 ball up until today. And a lot of people don't like the fact that the Yankees, the Mets, the Dodgers, Angels, and Houston are the teams with the big records right now. And
right.
Of course.
TV's going to like it if that happens.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, the big markets.
You know, since 2009, since the Yankees won the World Series. So it's been a little while.
It's been 2009, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
And there's not a single player on the team that was on that team. So you're talking, it's been a little while. I don't know, other than that, in baseball.
I guess for on the Twins level, we should mention that, I guess, Chris Paddock went out for the season. Unfortunately. Tommy John surgery.
He did.
Yeah. So he's done for the season, unfortunately. Mm. But Carlos Correa just came back, though.
They sent Royce Lewis down.
That was getting a little controversy because he performed well for the few weeks he came in there.
Well, didn't he hit a grand slam one of his first at-bats?
Yeah, I kind of got a stat sheet. He got 308 batting average, 325 on base, and 564 slugging in 11 games. So
Bubba, you been to any pro baseball games?
I have.
So the very first one, the very first pro baseball game you went to.
Okay. The very first one I went to, Lowell was living in Cambridge, Minnesota, and I was driving. I was a sophomore in high school, and my youngest brother was with me, and he was going to take us down to a Twins game. Well, they had a rain out for his amateur baseball team, and he's not going to skip a game that he has to play. So the first time I was ever in the Twin Cities, I was driving as like a 16-year-old with my little brother.
And
you know, at that time, there's no GPS
or anything. No, I know.
We're the same age.
There's no way I want to be driving at that age.
No, but I wanted to go to that game.
Yeah.
So we go there. It's a doubleheader against the Angels.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we racked up a lot. Yeah.
In the old Met.
No. It was
in the Metrodome?
Metrodome, because they had a doubleheader because the roof collapsed.
Oh, okay.
So they had to make up that game. And we racked up a good bill with concessions, but the anxiety trying to get out of the Twin Cities when it was dark, and my youngest brother thinking this is easy.
Yeah, it's not,
because he's in like he's 5 years behind me. I'm a sophomore in high school. He's in fifth grade, and just like, just go. He's trying to tell me how to get out of there. But we made it back, and we saw two games. That's my first professional baseball game that I saw. It was awesome. Yep.
So we're talking early '80s.
It would have been like 78. Carew was playing. It would have been his last year with the Angels, maybe 77. Yeah. So the Angels were good. The Twins were not.
Yeah.
Well, not very good at that time. But then they won it just 81, right?
No.
87.
Oh, 87. Right. Yeah, 10 years later. No, that's right. I'm off a decade.
The Twins, you know, when I was a kid, we listened to them on the radio every night, mm-hmm. right? That's how we had to keep
sure.
up. Sure. Was listening to them on the radio. And in those days, if they finished as high as second in the division, we were happy.
Yeah.
So how about you? Well, you grew up around the Brewers.
Earliest memory? Yeah, like we used to go to County Stadium a lot. So my dad grew up going to like Milwaukee Braves games when Hank Aaron was playing.
Your dad was a coach.
Yeah, he was a coach. And then he grew up like an hour north of Milwaukee. So big Brewers fan. They used to go to games all the time. I think the youngest, I might have, because Chicago was only like an hour from where I grew up. So we went to a Mets-Cubs game at Wrigley one time. And I remember it because it was probably like 90, 91, probably 5 or 6 years old. But my dad, he dropped like a foul ball, and I was so pissed at him. Like, we could have, we were behind home plate, like upper deck, and I think was there a guy named Howard Johnson that played for the Mets? Maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was Howard Johnson. I don't know why I remember this, but he went for the ball and like hit his palm and it fell down and like under the seats, and then we didn't get it. But yeah, we used to go to County Stadium to like the Mariners. So that was like a Ken Griffey's coming to town. So we always had to go watch the Mariners play because it was, I had my Griffey glove, and it was like, he was the guy. I was a lefty. So I loved Ken Griffey going up, but now I root hard for the Brewers. Like, they're in first, so try to get over. Now County Stadium's no longer there, so now it's Miller Park, but now they called it something else, like American Family Park or something.
But that's one of the things going on in the season right now is you got all on the coast, you got the big fat teams, but in the Central, you got the Twins and the Brewers leading the division.
That's awesome.
And that's nice.
You know, one of the most fun series I ever went to is when the Brewers were still in the American League.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They swapped them out.
Yeah, Molitor was playing for the Brewers yet, and I went and watched three games, the Twins and the Brewers, and it was so fun because there were Brewers fans and Twins fans in the same stadium, so it was a really fun atmosphere. I remember, and I was just so impressed by how Paul Molitor played baseball. Gosh, he was good.
Was he a Creighton guy?
Yes.
He's a St. Paul kid?
Yeah.
So he was actually coming home to play against the Twins, but he was playing for the Brewers, and
that's,
he was.
That's why he finished in Minnesota.
Yeah, my childhood years, I had no concept or proper concept of the home team, but my favorite baseball player was Paul Molitor. I was following him back with the Brewers, and, you know, he had those great years with the Blue Jays there, getting the World Series MVP and all that. And so, and then just to see him wrap up with the Twins there, managing and all that, that was, what a run.
So awesome. I was a kid, but I got to go to Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia in 1977. And I saw the Reds play the Phillies. So the Reds won the series in 75 and 76. And the Phillies, you know, that's the Mike Schmidt, Greg Luzinski, Gary Maddox, Steve Carlton, Tim Carver team. And then the Reds, of course, is Johnny Bench, Pete Rose, George Foster, Joe Morgan.
Davey Concepcion.
Davey Concepcion. Wow. And between the two teams, you probably had 10 Hall of Famers, you know, and 15-9 was the score. And we're talking, you know, two teams at the top of their divisions. And then on the way back from that trip, we see the White Sox play the Twins in the old Met. And the White Sox beat them 8-1. Eric Soderholm was playing for the White Sox and hit a couple of home runs. You know, he was a Twin, right?
Right, right.
And so those are my two earliest baseball games, okay. 1977. But I bring that up because and the reason I bring it up is Pete Rose, Hall of Fame or not?
He should be in the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, I think he should be in.
Well, 4,000 hits. He played on three World Series championships with two different teams. There's only a handful of guys that have won World Series on two different teams in the history of baseball.
Who else did he win one with? The Reds?
Phillies.
And the Phillies?
Okay. And the Phillies. Yeah, he went to the Phillies after that. Dale says we got to get this one last ad in here, and I'm going to jump around. We've got to get to the horses yet, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Life doesn't seem to ever slow down. Everything needs to be done right now. When it comes time for an oil change, stop into Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Most oil changes are done within 15 minutes. Valvoline Instant Oil Change does more, too. Transmission and coolant flushes, the tire rotations, and batteries. And included in your oil change, they'll top off your fluids, check your tires, battery, lights, wipers, and cabin air filter. You'll get discounts for fleets and the military, too. They can text and email invoices and coupons. And mention GFBS and get $10 off your oil change. Valvoline Instant Oil Change. It's open Monday through Saturday with no appointment needed. And pickup and delivery is available in Grand Forks, too. Come to Valvoline Instant Oil Change for a complete oil change and more. 3325 South 38th Street or call 701-780-8462 and tell them GFBS sent you.
And I do got a score update, Monty, on the Heat-Celtics game. It's about halfway through the first. Heat are up 18-10. So that is the status of that one. I'll make sure to get you updated here.
Early on. Okay, fellas, did you cover any NHL? Keeping any idea going on there?
I watch it, but I can't, you know what? I really like the playoffs because they really play, but I can't – I don't know who's in which division and which – what's going on right now? You got to bring me up to date.
No, I don't. I haven't really been following too much. I know the Wild got knocked out. I was watching the heartbreaker. Wild.
Well, yeah. After we wrapped up last week's show, we went and saw the Wild in the playoffs last week, and unfortunately, we must have jinxed them. we're watching them, and yeah, because the other game started pretty much right when we wrapped up last weekend. Yeah, it was a heartbreaker to watch that one.
Was that game six? They lost in game
five. Well, I think that was game five, and I think they did game six was like Saturday, or I think, and I think that, or and that, yeah, I think they lost game five and six, I want to say.
Yeah, they lost game five at home, and then they went down to St. Louis, got finished off. Right now, tonight's games were the Lightning, so it's the Battle of Florida. Tampa Bay Lightning, who's won the last two.
Yeah. And, they got two in a row?
Yeah. And then the Florida Panthers, and it's 1-0 in the series for the Lightning going into tonight.
And that, right now, that game, they just ended the second period tied 1-1. So.
And then the other game tonight is the St. Louis Blues and the Colorado Avalanche. Avalanche have the best record in hockey and have been way out in front of everybody all season long, and they're up 1-0.
That starts at 8:30,
and it's Calgary and Edmonton. I know they're playing.
Well, and that's the Battle of Alberta.
Yes,
that's fun.
And those two teams—if you've seen anything at all about the highlights of their battles this season—fisticuffs everywhere. Those two teams have a real hatred.
There you go.
You know, when you see fights break out in hockey, typically the goalies match up against each other. They don't veer off into other guys. You know, so they're. But this goalie for Edmonton is fighting with defensemen. I'm like, these two teams really do not like each other.
All right, there you go. How many are left? Eight total? Four on each side?
Four on each side. Yeah. Yep. And so last night, the Calgary Flames beat the Oilers 9-6, game one.
Yeah. A lot of goals.
And there was like 5 minutes into the game, it was 3-0 Jeez. Calgary. Mm-hmm. It was insane. And that crowd, apparently in that stadium, it's like the old Ralph where they're on top of you.
Yeah.
just insane. And then, and so the other game was, I'm a Ranger fan, yep. and the Rangers got beat by the Hurricanes in overtime, 2-1. Game-winning goal was by a guy named Ian Cole, who was a Wild player up until not too long ago. And so 2-1 against the Hurricanes. But it's the hockey is so wide open. These yeah. teams, this could end up being seven-game series again.
Right.
And that's the one thing about the NBA playoffs and the hockey has been all these seven-game series. Just that's what they want,
right?
The networks, right?
Right.
So
it might end in mid-July. You know, they keep going.
The basketball always has been late.
Yeah.
It needs to be done. But the Preakness Stakes, guys. Okay, we got nine horses.
Nine
horses. There were 20 in the Derby. Strike Rich. Rich Strike was in the 21 spot, but the 20 horse was the one that scratched and was out, and then Rich Strike got in on Friday, like 30 minutes before the deadline to be in the race.
Did you guys see that race, by the way, the Kentucky Derby?
Yeah.
Oh man, how about that? How about it?
It was the most exciting Derby I've ever witnessed.
Well,
it was really cool. I am
in a 20 horse race, anything can happen.
Yeah.
But what happened in the Derby, and people get tired of listening to me about it, but it's 20 horses. One horse was from Dubai. A second horse was from Japan. Those two horses came at a full gallop out of the gate.
They were fired up.
They set the pace.
Uh-huh.
Fastest first quarter mile in Derby history.
Okay.
145 years. Okay. And so all of these top-ranked thoroughbreds have to hold back as long as they can, watching that pace. And they all let loose too soon. The only one that didn't was Rich Strike.
Mm-hmm.
Epicenter and Zandon, if they'd have waited another, 15 meters before letting loose, they probably would have finished out front. But much like a runner, that final kick, if you go too soon. And most of my bets were tied to a horse called Messier. He was one of the favorites, ridden by a guy named John Velasquez.
Anything to do with your guy Mark Messier, or is that?
Yeah. That's okay. Exactly why.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rangers. There you go.
But he was a good horse.
Okay.
And he's not in this race now. But that's what happened in the Derby, was that those two foreign horses set a pace that was ridiculous.
Why is there a reason? Because do they run faster races over there? Are they shorter courses?
They run solely on artificial turf. They don't run on grass or dirt. They run on artificial turf, and only one time in the history of the Derby has a foreign horse won. So you're looking at, I've never been on a foreign horse.
All right.
Hey, who is the horse that was freaking out in the when they were trying to get him in the starting blocks?
Oh,
the one that was kicking and
yeah, that was he, one.
I think he's in the Preakness too.
Yeah, he is. I think it's either Happy Jack or Secret Oath.
I think it's Happy Jack.
Happy Jack. Happy Jack is a long shot in the Preakness at 30-1 right now.
Uh huh.
Okay. Now there's only nine horses. The safest bet I could, okay, simplification is at the post, right, in one. He's ridden by John Velasquez. In the Derby, he was like the 12th or 13th horse or so, ridden by Jose Ortiz. So they've switched jockeys. Okay, John Velasquez was on Messier.
Okay.
Messier's not in the race. So he's on simplification. Simplification finished fourth in the Derby. Creative Minister is ridden by Brian Hernandez. He wasn't in the Derby. I checked him out. Well, okay, here we go. Simplification. In his last eight starts, he's won three times. Okay. The number two horse, Creative Minister, Brian Hernandez Jr. His last three starts, he's won twice. Okay. Third place horse is a horse called Fenwick, who's going off at 50-1 right now, ridden by Florian Drew. In his last six starts, he's got one win. The Four Horse is Secret Oath, ridden by Luis Saez, who's my second favorite jockey behind John Velasquez. He's got 8 starts and 5 wins. I'm telling you, that's one you want to keep an eye on.
What's his name?
Secret Oath.
Secret Oath. You got that, coach?
Number Four Horse.
Keep the oath.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, rumors are going to be popping over here.
The number 5 horse is Early Voting, ridden by Jose Ortiz. He was on Simplification in the last race. That's got 3 starts with 2 wins. Happy Jack at 6 is going to be a long shot, but Tyler Gaffleone is a guy that he's a tough jockey to bet against, but that horse has got 5 starts and only 1 win. The 7 horses are Magnac, Irad Ortiz, so Jose's brother.
Okay.
He's riding that one, and that horse has got 5 starts with 2 wins. And then Epicenter is the 8 horse with Joel Rosario, and that horse has 7 starts with 4 wins. That's the second place horse in the Derby. And then the 9th place horse is a long shot named Skippy Longstocking, ridden by Junior Alvarado. He typically races out of Gulfstream Park in Florida. He's a good jockey. I like him. But that horse has had 9 starts and 2 wins, so he's a real long shot.
Yeah.
So my bet, Simplification was 4th in the Derby, Happy Jack was 14th in the Derby, and Epicenter was 2nd in the Derby. What I would bet, a safe bet, is a 50-cent trifecta box, okay? Horses 1, 4, 5, 7, and 8. Those are the odds-on favorites of this panel. So you're trying to get the first 3, 1, 2, 3, mm-hmm. right? And you're boxing 5 horses. 50-cent trifecta box is a $30 bet. It's a safe bet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to be more daring and throw long shots into that, the 1 and the 8, same kind of bet, but the 1... The Simplification that finished 4th in the Derby, and Epicenter that finished 2nd in the Derby. So those 2 horses, the 1 and the 8, and then pick any 3 other horses in that same bet. You put the long shots in if you want, but you're only looking for 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Right? So if you get one of those long shots on top, a trifecta bet like that can end up paying, well, in the Derby, it because of the 80-1, paid $8,000. And I was telling you guys I had the late pick 3 where I picked the winners in 12, 13, and 14. And it paid $1,400 on a $10 bet. And I'm not sure how many different variations of this I'm going to throw together, but I'm working on it.
All right.
We're going to have some fun, huh?
Well, like I say, I got my favorite jockeys. I got my favorite horses. But at least when I go make my bets, I have at least an idea what the hell's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got a plan. You got to have a plan.
Coach, Danny, do you guys keep up with much horse racing weekly? Or
not
like,
really. No, I just obviously like this time of the year, there's the 3 big races, oh, yes. So you kind of get fired up. And oh, it's Derby weekend, you know, but
I really wanted to make it. I know, yeah, we were talking about it. You know, Rumors is one of our sponsors, too. Where we were talking about their big Derby party, and I just hear how that – I couldn't make it out there, but I just heard how that place is just packed every year for it.
Oh, yeah. So, and they've only got, like, at a maximum 2 windows open, and sometimes a line will be out here in the hallway – And it's maddening because there's this crew of guys I know, and they bet all the time, betting horses all the time. In fact, I had bets tonight yet on other races.
Yeah.
But we're waiting in line behind this horde of people that has no idea what they're doing. They don't know what racetrack they're at. They don't know how to tell them the bet. And you're standing back there, and you're going, okay, there's 2 minutes to post. Please make your bet and get the hell out of my way.
Yeah.
You know, so there's that.
Sure.
And I tell BT, Bill Terrell over here, yep. Rumors, that I said, every moron in the country comes out for the Derby. And he's like, yeah, but we like having them here.
Of course so, they do. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, Dale, you got any more stuff over there? Or
I guess I'll just give a...
Wrapping it up?
Yeah, we'll wind it down here. I'll just give a quick shout out to just a little quick motorsports here. Hopefully River City Speedway is supposed to kick off the race season tomorrow. Hopefully, but who knows, the rain today may... I know, talking to John earlier today, or the other day, it sounds like maybe up in the air depending on how bad the rain accumulates today. But hopefully they'll start it off tomorrow there. Well, and I guess, yeah, Kurt Busch won the Advent 400 for the NASCAR Cup last week, but Chase Elliott's the points leaderboard leader right now. So that's your little quick motorsports half a minute there.
No wrestling?
Oh, gosh. I won't. No. No, I won't. Don't. No.
Okay, well, my last thing I got is this week's cheerful person of the week is Nick Michaels, a salesman over at Rydell. An upbeat, smiling young man who works hard at his craft. Keep it up, Nick Michaels. Keep smiling, making everybody happy. Thank you. Coach, thanks for coming in, spending time with us.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for your
sports.
Time.
Anything you want to add to anything there? Or
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for having us.
No, we appreciate that. And Danny over here, you're going to make sure you talk to Pat now?
Oh, yeah.
About letting that goal in?
Yeah, I'll probably call him tonight. Maybe the family group chat. There was six on the ice.
Cost
100%.
Cost of the game.
Yeah, it's not good. I mean,
is there like any upcoming open panel events or anything like that coming up there to give a plug to? Or open practices, stuff like that? Or
yeah, August. I mean, we start training camp in August, so we'll be outside for that. But
or perhaps
a lot of summer camps.
Yeah,
we got youth camps coming up in June and July. So if your kids want to come out and learn some football, it's usually really fun. It's a good chance to just learn fundamentals. We have youth camps in June and July and high school camps and that sort of stuff going on for recruiting. But I know the youth camps are a lot of fun. They get to see Bubba do the gritty. You know, he's out there dancing.
Now you brought that up.
We got football. We call it Bubba Ball. So it's
that was the one thing I wanted to touch on. It reminds me of Gene the Dancing Machine on the Gong Show.
You mean the worst gritty in America?
Oh, we love that. We love that. We tuned in for that for sure.
Pretty strong. Yeah. If I would have made that reverse layup, I would have gritty that right in front of you. On the sideline.
Yeah, come out for the youth camps. It's awesome. We have a lot of fun with kids.
There we go.
A lot of fun.
September 3rd, the opener with Nebraska.
Potato Bowl. It's the 10th. Potato Bowl is the 10th. But we got some people traveling down to Lincoln, only 7 hours away. So
Straight shot I-29.
You can speed in South Dakota a little bit too,
Well, I think Bill actually picked up something like 4 or 5 tickets for that game down there already for us and is trying to make sure I go down there with him. So we'll see.
All right.
Yeah, that's the one big deal, the Lincoln one. And he's always on top of that stuff. He's way out there ahead of us. Like I said, the guy... He bleeds green, and Bill is when we did the NFL discussions from way back in September, all he talked about was Cooper Cup, Cooper Cup, Cooper Cup, Cooper Cup, Cooper Cup, didn't he?
Yep. No. But no, yeah.
And it was like I quit arguing with him. Just.
Stud.
Yep, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Very good.
And I guess one last quick score update. The end of the first, Celtics and Heat. Celtics are up 35-24. And in the hockey game, it is a little ways into the third period, still tied 1-1 with Lightning and Panthers. So.
All right. You want to cue the music?
Yep, we'll cue her up.
All right. Thank you, Coach, for coming in for sure. It was great to have you here. We're looking forward to get you guys back. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Offensive coordinator.
A lot of fun.